podcast. We turn our attention to Southeast Asia, where a new crop of Thai players are making waves across the continent. Led by breakout star Chanathip Songkrasin, Thailand has emerged as a hotbed for untapped talent within the Asian game, and Japan's J-League their preferred destination. We chat with experts in both Thailand and Japan to get a clearer picture of the situation and assess the possibility of similar success on Korean shores. Their interviews and more on the all-new K-League United podcast. Hello, annyeonghaseyo. Ryan Walters here, manning the booth solo for a change of pace, to follow up on a recently published article in Hwaego magazine about Thailand international Chanathip Songkrasin. A star on the rise for both club and country, the man known as Messi J signing with Consadole Sapporo in J-League marked a sea change within the Asian transfer market and opened the door wide for his fellow countrymen to make the move abroad. To get a better understanding of the player and what his move to one of Asia's top leagues has meant back home, I spoke with ESPN FC contributor and Thai football expert Paul Murphy. Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thanks for inviting me on.
So the focus for the podcast is talking about Southeast Asian talent and specifically Thai League talent, and there's nobody better to talk to than you about this. And I think for a lot of folks following the Asian game, the Thai League's kind of popped up more recently in the past couple of years with teams like Muangthong and Buriram United both making it to the round of 16, whereas I think they were a little bit more absent in previous years. Can you just talk a little bit about the evolution of Thai soccer and where things are right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going back a little bit further. They've been competing okay in the Champions League, but it's still quite a young national league. It didn't really start to gain some traction until 2007 when they went to the national league, if you like, and that made it much more competitive than it had been. I think they first made a big noise in the Champions League in 2013 when Buriram got to the quarterfinals. But there had been good results prior to that from various teams. They'd won games against teams from Korea, Japan, and even back in 2003, BC Tero made it to the final. But the final, it was a very different tournament then. It was in the kind of the route they had was a lot less difficult than you'd have nowadays to get to a final. But yeah, I think the last 5 years we've probably seen more consistency, and with the last 2 years getting to the final. Sorry, get to the last 16. Sorry, I think that's an indication that there's a level there that they're very competitive in that competition. But part of it's due to the professionalisation of the league over a 10-year period, really.
Yeah, I was going to ask specifically. We got cops are coming for you. I was going to ask specifically speaking, what do you think has propelled that change in recent years?
I think a lot of it is down to bringing in more foreign players, coaches, and I think clubs are starting to recognise the value of academies, building from the grassroots a little bit. There's also the fact that the Thai clubs take the Champions League very seriously, which is not necessarily the case with other countries. Okay. So you'll see that. Places like Korea, Australia, we've seen them, and Japan this year as well, we've seen them putting out second string teams sometimes, mm-hmm. Because they're giving more importance to the domestic league. I think in Thailand, they probably rest players for the league game to make sure they're fit for a Champions League game. So I think that's part of the issue as well. But there's definitely a bit more talent in Thailand as well. The level of the players is a bit higher. And they've shown they can compete at that level in Asia for sure, in the Champions League. And they've usually got a kind of core of good, strong foreign players and teams like Buriram.
Speaking of the talent in Thailand, I think that leads perfectly into the man that we're probably going to be talking quite a bit about, Chanathip Songkrasin. And before getting into his move to Japan and what that's meant for Thai football, just for those that didn't watch him in Thai League, that weren't lucky enough to get that view, what was it like seeing him on a regular basis in Thailand?
I think if you look back, I think his big breakthrough, I mean, he was an emerging talent. He was well known in Thailand for quite a long time. But I think if I look back, 2014 was his big breakthrough year when he really became a star in Southeast Asia, at least. He performed well at the Asian Games where Thailand mm-hmm. came fourth. He was man of the match in the League Cup final when BC Tero pulled off an upset to Buriram, and then he had a very he was MVP I think in this in the AFF Cup when Thailand won that year, and yeah, he scored a spectacular goal in the final to clinch the tournament, and yeah, I think that was a huge year for him domestically and internationally. The following year was a bit, he was a bit injury plagued, and his team didn't do too well. But then he got the move to Mung Tong, which raised his profile to a new level again. And he performed very well in the team that, that won the league that year. And then even better the following year when he was there for the first 6 months, and he played really well in the Champions League for Mung Tong. So you've just seen a gradual improvement in his level, and you know, he's now I think 25, so he's getting to the stage where his best years are still ahead of him, but yeah, in Thailand he didn't quite have the same goal scoring form as he's shown this year with Consadole, which is great. He's shown something else to his game, but I think what's most exciting about it in Thailand is his transition of play, and the way he can move play forward with dribbling or the pass. He's got so much to his game. And I think when he left Mung Tong, it really showed. It was a big miss for them when he left last year.
Yeah, that team, oh, they were really good when they had a bunch of stars, and then a bunch of those guys left, and it's been a noticeable difference. I mean, I don't know any team that could make up for the losses that they had to suffer through.
Yeah, it was the four best Thai players who just happened to be playing for the same club. Right. And yeah, you can't replace them easily.
Yeah, and speaking of them leaving, I think to keep the focus on Chanathip right now, his move to J-League, he's, like as you said, he's made even more of a name for himself there. He's got a lot more eyes watching him, and a lot more people are seeing this. And I'm curious, has that success and his success at the national level, has that carried over with the consciousness of Thai fans in the way of J-League recognition? Like, are people wearing J-League kits out on the streets? Is there a demand for watching the games? What's it like over in Thailand?
Well, the games are shown live by the True Corporation, which is the big sort of company that does the, you know, that shows all the kind of games from football companies around the world, from football leagues around the world, sorry. And so you can get a lot of games live now from one of the big media companies here. And I wouldn't say there's been a noticeable difference in the number of people going around wearing J-League shirts, for example. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's not going to be replacing La Liga and the Premier League anytime soon.
Sure.
But certainly, I would imagine there's a lot more fans following it. And any time, if you watch it online, for example, and you'll see a lot of people are watching the games when Chanathip's playing and the other two Thai players are with the J League One teams, so definitely there's definitely an added interest there. Mm-hmm. What that leads to, I mean, in the J League, I've been working. There was actually an exhibition at the weekend on Japan generally. They had a J League stall, so they're definitely working there to kind of improve those links. And quite a few Thai clubs have got links with J League clubs as well. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely things happening, and they had the MOU signed last year as well. It's definitely a relationship that seems to be mutually beneficial at the moment, with the possible exception of Mung Tong, who have lost so many good players.
Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate for them, but it seems to be working out for others. I'm curious, like within the league, talking to players and coaches, has the mentality towards J-League changed at all, or is it being viewed as kind of the go-to league? I'm just kind of curious if that's changed at all in recent years.
I think it's seen as a go. I mean, it's seen as a level up from the Thai League, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I think it's culturally one of the easier adaptations for Thai football players, with the possible exception of the weather. But I think there's been a real opening of tourism to Japan from Thailand a few years ago. They got rid of the requirement to have a visa, and so it's visa free now for 14 days. And I think a lot of people have gone on holiday, come back raving about Japan. Mm-hmm. And I think that mentality is Japan's the place to go in a lot of ways. And that extends to football, I think. I think footballers see it as a place they can settle in. Obviously, there's a language barrier. Mm-hmm. And the climate's a bit harsher, obviously, especially in Sapporo. I think people feel closer to Japan. There's a lot of Japanese residents in Thailand. So I think there's a familiarity there that makes it less of a jump than going to Europe, for example.
Sure. Yeah, I think another thing that might be helping it out is something that I would like to see used a little bit more here in Korea, and that's the plus one roster rule, which allows for teams to have an additional foreigner on their squad from an Asian league, for those that aren't into the intricacies of Asian footballing rules. And it's something that, again, it's really underutilized in K-League, and I feel like it could really benefit the league, where that's usually used for like a Brazilian to come in and they're making a pretty good salary. And I feel like it could be better used to get some of these Thai stars that are currently going to J-League into K-League on a cheaper wage bill. But again, that's an outside perspective. So would that be the case, that some of these stars could come in for a lower wage bill than their Brazilian counterparts?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think the Thai League international players are quite well paid here.
Okay.
And obviously they can make a lot of money from side projects, mm-hmm. Advertising, small businesses. A lot of them get involved in that, modeling some of them as well. So
yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, that the earning percentage could be increased if they went to Korea, but if they were sitting on the bench as a squad player, they're value might go down in some ways. So I'm not really sure how it would translate salary-wise, but I'm not convinced it would be financially a great move for some Thai players to go to Korea, because obviously there's the cost of living as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do make quite a good living here, the ones that are playing for the national side. There's a big variation, and some are not too well paid. But I think possibly, but not definitely, they would going to Korea be a good move financially.
Well, if not financially, I guess the other side of it that a lot of people here in Korea look at it from is that in previous examples, Thai players or even a lot of players from throughout Southeast Asia, they haven't been able to make the game day squad. And whether that's each individual manager or whatever the case may be, the perception has become that players from the entire region aren't going to make the starting 11. And just from the Thai side of things, what's that perceived gap in quality? And to just put it more bluntly, do you think that these Thai international stars could break into the starting 11 of a K-League squad?
I think this. I mean, I think the examples we've got in the J-League suggest that they certainly could. I think Chanatip could easily play in the K-League. Tiraton obviously has. He's not quite made the same impression as Chanatip, but he's been relatively regular for Vissel with Iniesta and Podolski. And Tirasin's been more of a squad player recently, but again, he's with the team that's top of the J League, so that's not a failure on his part, and he's scored a few goals. So those three examples, I think, certainly could easily fit into a K League squad and possibly be a first team regular. Based on what we've seen in the Champions League, how Thai teams have got the better of a couple of Korean sides in the mm-hmm. past 2 years, there's nothing to fear, really. It's really just the cultural aspect of settling in a new country with a different language.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are quite tough as well. But I think the ability is there for a number of players to be solid first team regulars in Korea. I'm not quite sure what the next generation is going to do, because the next few years we'll see what players develop well, because the under-23s haven't been performing very well. But I think there's definitely potential there, and I think Korea should really look harder into it and see if they can exploit the market here.
Yeah, it'd be great to see some of them come over. I got two more questions for you, and I'll start with the easy one, because we're talking about players that might be able to make the jump over here. And I was wondering, is there anybody that fans of K-League should be keeping an eye on right now that's playing in the Thai League, a Thai star that you feel could make that jump and that should be on more radars?
I think at the moment, I mean, a player, he's not his best season, but a player I could see fitting quite well would be a Titipan Pungchan, who plays for Bangkok Glass as a central midfielder. He's Since Milovan Rajovic got the job as Thailand head coach, he immediately made this guy one of his first first team regulars where he hadn't been before. He's a combative midfielder. He's got a lot of energy, and I think he's got a bit of a temperament problem sometimes. He can be a bit rash in the challenge, but I can see him easily fitting into a key league team if he can sort of adapt his game a little bit. Tanabun Kesarat also plays for Bangkok Glass alongside him. He's almost a year out with injury, which has been unfortunate. But again, he's a player with potential. If he can stay injury free for a while, I think he could also be potentially a player that's worth looking at. He's defensive midfielder, but he can, he sometimes plays at the back if they need him. And I think there's a lot to his game, and if he can get a run of games and get to back to the form he was in. Same for Sarat Yuyen, who was for a while seen as the next big thing. But he had another injury layoff, and he's not quite got the form back. He's at Mung Tong United. He's an attacking midfielder. Had great potential. Hasn't quite reached the form he was in before his injury. But if he can get that back, I'd like to see him get another league, see if he can make it. Mm-hmm. And one last one I'd like to mention is Tristan Doe, who's quite well known. Great energy at right wing back or further forward at right midfield. Tough tackler. Started scoring goals this year. He's been pushed further forward up the field, and he puts in a good cross. So I think he could definitely fit into one of the K-League teams.
Well, hopefully the Jeonnam Dragons front office is listening to this podcast and they'll write down all of those names. We could use the help. So the question I'll get you out of here on is maybe not necessarily an easy one, but in your opinion, being on the Thai side of things and being on an up-and-coming league, what do you think it would take to improve the player movement specifically with K-League? Because J-League has obviously done a really good job with it. And I'm just curious what you think could help this relationship right now.
I think for the Thai players to feel that the K-League's an achievable option, you need a relationship between clubs and Thai League clubs, possibly. Mm-hmm. Start off slowly with a loan deal for a player. And that's basically the way, if you follow the J-League model, that's what they've done. They've established the partnerships. They took a player on loan from an under-23 player, because they've got the under-23 sides as well, which gives a little bit more of a developmental side to it. And obviously, Chanatip was the big star. They kind of got him, and it kind of opened the floodgates a little bit, it seemed to be. So I think they have to sort of, and maybe the sign an MOU with the Thai FA. That seems to have greased the wheels a little bit. It's made things move more quickly since last year. And I think that's the key, is really developing those relationships first. Mm-hmm. So players feel comfortable, possibly with a trial period, and then they can have a look at each other and see if it's worth pursuing a move. But certainly, the K-League have to be maybe more forthcoming and making those, building those contacts in Thailand, because that seems to be the way. The J-League seems to have a strategy, and it seems to be working out very well for them.
Yeah, it seems like they're certainly moving into phase two of what's been a plan, and hopefully for those of us wanting to see some more Thai stars over here in Korea, the K-League clubs pick up on that sooner than later. But in the meantime, I guess we'll just settle for some truly entertaining ACL matches with some really great crowds over there in Thailand.
Yeah, that's the one. I mean, the atmosphere that the games when Mung Tong were in the Champions League last year were great. Wasn't quite as good at Buriram this year, because they didn't quite get the crowds to fill their stadium. But if you can pack in a stadium of like 10 to 15,000, it's a great experience for sure.
And it still looks good on TV, so.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the highlights of the Thai football calendar.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Looking to spend some downtime with friends and fellow gamers in Seoul? Drop by Retro Game Bar. Located in Hongdae near Sangsu Station Exit 1, RGB is a retro game-inspired bar where you can play any and all types of games. Test their bartenders' drink mixing capabilities or watch a game cast of your choosing. For those with a competitive side, sign up for monthly tournaments including Tekken, Mario Kart, and K-League United's FIFA 19 competitions. Follow RGB on Facebook for tournament info and details on other events throughout the month. Mention that you're a fan of K-League United to their hard-working bartenders when you stop by for a starter shot to kick off the evening. Game on!
Boasting the likes of Lucas Podolski, Andres Iniesta, and Fernando Torres, Japan's J-League is another Asian league on the rise right now. However, in spite of those marquee men grabbing most of the headlines, Chanathip and fellow countryman Tirasel Dangja continue to lead the way for more Southeast Asian players to ply their trade in Japan. To dive into what that influx of talent has meant to J-League and how K-League clubs may be able to emulate it, I chatted with the Japan Times sports editor Dan Orlowitz. Let's go ahead and bring him in now. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. It's a pleasure.
So let's just jump right into it. We've been talking about mainly Thai stars on the podcast so far, but in general, J-League has kind of emerged as the destination for all of Southeast Asian talent in Asia right now. In your opinion, how did this development come about?
The J-League and, in a broader sense, the Japan Football Association have been very proactive in working with FAs in the region, working with leagues in the region, establishing partnerships to raise the level of play overall. The philosophy of the JFA has been essentially a rising tide lifts all boats. There really, if you look at the continent, Japan doesn't have many competitors. There's South Korea, Australia, Saudi Arabia, depending on the cycle. There aren't that many great top-class national programs and league systems in Asia that can regularly get to the World Cup, that can regularly contend for the Asian Cup. So if there's more competition on the bottom, and if that bottom gets raised higher to the new middle, all of a sudden it's a lot tougher for teams to get through qualifying. And so that's one way that Japan can improve. So the JFA does coaching exchanges. The JFA will sponsor this and that, help coaches get licenses. And the J-League has gotten in on this too. Various clubs have established partnerships with Southeast Asian clubs. The league itself has a number of partnerships with other leagues, not just in Southeast Asia, but also one or two in West Asia and in mm-hmm. Europe here and there, and I think the A-League as well. So they're all working to basically make the J-League and Japanese football as a whole as somewhat of the power behind the throne, the godfathers, if you will, helping everyone get better.
Yeah, and I think it's something that we're seeing that, I like the Godfather analogy, so we'll run with that one. I think we're starting to see a lot of that come to fruition right now with the amount of talent, mainly from Southeast Asia and other areas, that are coming into J-League. For example, last year, A-League, talking about East Asian football, one of the bigger leagues, didn't have a single Southeast Asian player. The Chinese Super League and K-League only had one last year. Meanwhile, J-League kind of filling that role of wanting to be the kingmakers, as you put it. They had six Southeast Asian players in the top three divisions, with a number of them in the lower divisions, which is something that is really interesting to me. Just the idea that there are J-League clubs more willing to develop the talent instead of searching for a finished product. In your opinion, has that been the case? Are there clubs purposefully looking for project players, or is it just a case where they're just better fit in lower divisions?
I think that in the last year or two, especially with these Thai players such as Chanathip, Tirasel, Tiratan, you really finally had clubs zeroing in on top-class Asian players, or excuse me, top-class Southeast Asian players, and bring them into an environment where they could perform. Chanathip wasn't really a project. He still had to adjust to the game. You know, he still had to adjust to the J-League. With Tirasel, it was the same. With Tiratan, it was the same. But they all did so in relatively little time, and it was very impressive. In the past, you did have clubs where I would put it, the interest started on the sponsorship level. For example, Matsumoto Yamada brought in Singaporean goalkeeper Iswan Mabood for a trial about 2 years ago, and that really came through Epson, who are the club's big sponsor. He got that trial because actually he, a month earlier, he was the goalkeeper in that famous 0-0 draw between Singapore and Japan at Saitama Stadium. So he impressed, and that was a good showing. Someone at Epson saw them and said, well, we have an office in Singapore, so maybe we can turn this into something. That's essentially what it is. You do have club sponsors looking at the Southeast Asian market, not just as a place to from which to draw players, mm-hmm. but also as a region in which they can expand their market. You saw this with Seteso Osaka. Yanmar Diesel was very aggressively advertised in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. When they signed Diego Forlan, they did a huge push into Indonesia, Thailand, and Vietnam because they have big markets there and they're trying to expand out. The J-League recognizes this and they agree with this. I mean, essentially, Japan only has 120 million people and you can't grow the domestic audience beyond a certain point. Mm-hmm. The next easiest place to do so geographically is the rest of Asia. But of course, you can't sell the J-League to South Korea or to China. So where do you go? You go to Southeast Asia, which they like Japan. They love Japanese players. And a lot of big Japanese corporations have outposts there. You look at the Thai League, and that's sponsored by Toyota. So it's a two-way street. The J-League theoretically gets Southeast Asian players, and the J-League clubs and the league sponsors and the club sponsors get markets. In theory, that's how it should work. I remember when Vietnamese star Lê Quang Vinh signed for Cantolao Sapporo in, I'm spitballing here, I think it was 2013 or so. That was the first time that a foreign company had put up a banner on like the electronic billboards in a J-League game, mm-hmm. or it's the first time a Vietnamese company did it, and that was revolutionary at the time. Over time, they've clearly worked on improving their scouting and being more serious about who they select and why they're selecting them. Mm-hmm. And as far as trials are concerned, it's less about these sort of glamour trials and doing things like bringing in kids from youth teams for an exchange. A bunch of clubs, Gamba Osaka, FC Tokyo, all sorts have brought in three or four players from some Indonesia club or some Vietnamese club or some Thai club, and they'll train with the under-18s for a couple weeks, and it's a good chance for them to get exposure and to get a good look at these kids without making it look like a cynical grab for ad bucks. So it's been trial and error. The league has been learning. I would hope that with the success that these Thai players have had so far, they'll bring in more next year because it's certainly working out pretty well for them so far.
Yeah, and I think it's something that K-League clubs would want to emulate, but I think one of the things, and again, this kind of goes back to the development side of things versus looking for the finished product, I think the most common complaint that I've heard from most folks within the league or just a general fan perspective of what it's been like in K-League traditionally is that a lot of Southeast Asian players just can't break into the squad, right? So we saw that with Luan Son Trong, the Vietnamese standout who was at Incheon United and Gangwon, and he couldn't get those first team minutes. To me, not being in the club, I feel like some of that is about perspective and about just the overall weight that region can pull with it. Do you think that J-League players like Chanathip can change that perspective and get more players a chance?
I think they can, and they are. All three of these J1 Thai players, I mean, they're starting regularly. Chanathip's starting in nearly every game. Mm-hmm. Tirasil is, he's basically split about 50-50 between starts and bench appearances, but he's still coming on as a sub and he's still making an impact, whether he's starting or whether he's coming off the bench. And Tiraton is starting basically most of the games. You do need to bring in players of a certain level. I don't think that J-League clubs have the patience to take a raw, unfocused talent and turn them into, into someone who can start in the J1 or the J2 regularly. Mm-hmm. You look at Chan Vathanaka from Cambodia. He basically spent a year on loan at Fujieda Mai FC, which is in the third division. And I don't think he played a single game. And he was a player, raw talent, but I'd heard when he made the signing that, you know, he was unfocused. He didn't commit in training as hard as he should have. So players like that aren't always going to do well. But, you know, players like the three ties, they came to the J League already established talent, with lots of national team experience, lots of ACL experience, and playing in a pretty decent league. So there's really nothing stopping players like those. Maybe these kids who can now look to Chanatip as a role model, mm-hmm. will say, like, well, listen, I've got to work harder and get to, you know, even a J3 side. They know that it's nearly impossible for them to go to Europe, but going to Japan, that's a much more viable goal than it was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Right. And I think a lot of that, yes, it's the marketing side of things, like we've talked about, it's those partnerships, but to me, a lot of it is even simpler than that, and it's using the +1 roster rule. And in K-League, it's just not used very often. And I feel like in J-League, they're using that a little bit more, both commercially and, like you're saying, to just develop the talent. And it's something that I feel like has had a good effect on the Japanese game. Has that been the case, that those +1 roster spots have actually benefited the league or football in the country in general?
It's funny you mention that, because the J-League has actually expanded its quote-unquote foreigner quota in the last couple of years. Now the rule is you can sign up to 5 foreign players to your roster. The match day squad has to be 3+1. Mm-hmm. However, the rule now, because the J-League has all of these agreements with leagues in Southeast Asia and elsewhere, if you are a player from one of those 8 countries, you are counted as a domestic signing. For practical purposes. So Chanatip, Tiraton, and Tirasil are all essentially counted as Japanese players. They do not count against the foreigner quota. And this rule was obviously instituted to give players from, you know, to give clubs incentive to sign players from these countries. And you look at, for example, Vissel Kobe. They've got right now Wellington, Lucas Podolski, Andres Iniesta, Kim Sung-gyu as their Asian spot, mm-hmm. and then Tiraton as a quote-unquote, you know, partnership spot, and Ahmed Yasser from Qatar as another partnership slot. So they have 6 foreign players who are signed, and actually all 6 could be on the pitch at the same time. Setusa Osaka, too, has Chawat Virachat, who's basically he's only playing for the under-23s this year. A promising Thai signing, and Pierce Waring, an Australian who actually is half Japanese. Mm. So I believe he's here on a Japanese passport. So you've got clubs who, if they're progressive enough, will look past the established Brazil and South Korea pipelines and look for players from unusual spots and bring them in and try to get them to work within the squad.
Well, and I think that's where K-League is stuck right now. It seems like, you know, talking about foreigner rules, you would think there was a rule that every team has to have a Brazilian player, because every team, when it comes time to sign, almost every single team goes through that tried and true pipeline that isn't always coming through so true. I think there are some within the league and like others that are involved on the writing side of things or the fan side of things would like to see more of players from abroad. But I think the concern with the clubs is that it wouldn't allow enough Korean players to get their time. And you know, unlike in J-League, there's even a ban on foreign goalkeepers here in Korea to just ensure that Korean players are getting as much time as possible. So a two-part question on that regard: are Japanese players still getting significant minutes in J-League? And then how much do you think having more of a foreign influence is affecting the game in Japan?
It's really hard to say for a couple of reasons. I don't think that there's any concern amongst the J-League community that foreign players are taking minutes from Japanese players. I think that there is a concern that veteran players are taking minutes away from younger players, and that is slowing down the development of some of our younger stars. That's why, for example, the J-League instituted a rule for the Levon Cup that all teams start, I believe, at least one player from the Olympic generation in every game.
Same here.
So there's a push for that. There's actually, after Iniesta's signing, there was a report the J-League's board of directors are discussing getting rid of the foreigner quotas entirely for next year and possibly beyond. And that's a debate that's going to be happening over a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we're going to get anywhere close to a real discussion on that before, you know, October or November. And that'll be interesting. I mean, I think that the problem is that, you know, you have these pipelines and it's the agents, it's the fixers, it's the scouts. That's a cycle that sort of needs to be broken. And I think this is really the first season in a very, very, very long time where you've had so many foreign players making such a big impact for their clubs.
These teams that do have a few more foreigners that are doing well, and especially with the marquee signings that J-League can boast now, the Podolskis, the Iniestas, and the Torreses of the world, to me, that's going to help Japanese players because they're on the squad with these world-renowned players, and I think that's going to help the domestic talent, and then also it's going to help these Southeast Asian players that have come in that are now playing with these guys as well. But some of the other teams you've talked about that don't have these big-money marquee signings, I still feel like J-League is setting a good precedent of becoming a more global league within Asia, and to me, that offers an opportunity for Japanese players to get that experience and to do better. And I guess, again, that's an outsider's perspective. Does that seem like that's coming through with some of the younger players in Japan right now?
You're right. And I think that if you look at how Torres and Iniesta played, especially in their first couple of games in the J-League, they are very consciously making these passes that if they were playing in the Champions League, if they were playing in La Liga, their teammates will connect with those passes and do something with them. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, Japanese players are maybe a step or too slow. Japanese players, you know, they don't see the game as Iniesta does. They don't see the game as Podolski does. And now that they can play off of each other, though their teammates can look at them and see how they play and realize that they have to bring their game up.
Talking about these marquee signings and to kind of bring it back to Southeast Asia as well, I feel like J-League is setting itself up to kind of be that go-to league within Asia. They've done well to position themselves as the league to watch in Thailand, in Singapore, in Cambodia. And I think K-League is in very real danger of falling behind J-League right now. I think when you look at Champions League, K-League's still doing quite well there. But in a number of years, I think because of the strides that J-League's making within Asia and with these marquee players, obviously, but I think for me, it's more what they're doing within the Asian market that I worry about K-League being able to keep up if they don't start to make some significant changes like J-League has.
I'd agree with that. Just as an observer, I mean, you look at just how many J-League fans will fly to Korea for a Champions League game on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night versus how many Korean fans will do the same to go to Japan. I mean, the league clearly has an attendance issue and a marketing issue. It's a league where the clubs are good, the players are good, but it's not resonating with audiences.
Right.
If the K-League can market to, say, Southeast Asia or to, you know, Taiwan, Hong Kong, some of these countries that are outside of the CSL bubble, you can make some progress. It would be nice if there were more Japanese players in the K-League and maybe get some interest going there. But for now, we mostly see the K-League as, you know, where Japanese players' career goes to die.
Except for Takahagi when he was with FC Seoul.
There you go.
Loved him with FC Seoul.
And we love him at FC Tokyo. So
that's another Seoul departure that you're welcome, J-League.
There you go. I mean, it's tough, but I mean, the political calculus there is also a bit complicated, and that's another issue entirely. In a way, what we're experiencing is, you can either call it J-League 2.0 or J-League 3.0 or J-League Next in the style of the evolutions that the MLS has gone through. Mm-hmm. If you want to look at it from the perspective of the national team, there were only 8 players in Japan's World Cup squad who played in the J-League.
I think that's a decent spot. K-League would be okay being in that kind of a position where you have become that spot for Southeast Asian players while sending their best abroad. And I think if K-League could try to follow that trend, I think that they'd be really well set up for the future.
There is something to be said for diversity, and the J-League is still trying to figure everything out. There's a lot more flags in the stands than there used to be, but it's going to take time for these players to find their footing, and it's going to take time for some of these clubs to figure out what they're looking for and learn how to deal with foreign players. Because, you know, it's Japan. It's not a perfect culture by any means. It's got a lot of positives, but it's still a different culture. Mm-hmm. So that's an adjustment period that will take time, and hopefully it'll work out great for everyone.
Yeah, they're certainly leading the way right now as far as East Asia goes. So hopefully we'll see that continue to happen, and hopefully we'll see some K-League clubs pick up on that in the future. But for now, we'll put a pin in that, and we'll talk to you again about those goalkeeper rules sometime soon.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thanks so much, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email KLU at info@kleagueunited.com or tweet at @KLeagueUnited with any questions, comments or reactions. Or follow us on Facebook to ask directly during one of our live shows.
While it may have taken the success of Chanathip and others for K-League clubs to realize the true potential of Southeast Asia, there are finally some wheels in motion to replicate J-League strategies in the region. Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors have partnered with Indonesian giants Persija Jakarta to focus on the development of young players. Similarly, K-League 2 side Ansan Greeners have signed a cooperation agreement with Thai 3rd Division club Chamchuda United. Admittedly, a much lower profile move between the lower levels of Asian football, but an important one to begin closing the gap between J-League's place at the top of the pecking order and wherever K-League currently sits. A vital step to get more diverse talent and viewership in a league sorely in need of a boost. With continually shrinking attendances and dwindling sponsorships, something is needed to revitalize the fan base not only domestically, but within Asia. Chanathip and the J-League clubs that fostered the cooperative culture that encouraged his move have shown one way to do it. The question for K-League is, will they be open enough to outside influences to change their ways before they're passed by as one of Asia's elite leagues? Thanks so much for listening to this edition of the K-League United podcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts and reactions to this edition about Southeast Asian players or any of the other previous editions of this podcast. Feel free to leave those in the comments wherever you download your podcasts or get involved on social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all of those places @K-League United. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and again, thanks for listening.